Now, Onisys can be used for a huge range of science, and later in the show we'll hear how it's been used for understanding biological systems and protecting electronic components.
But we're joined in the studio today by Professor Martin Dove from the School of Physics and Astronomy at Queen Mary University of London. He uses ISIS in his current position and in his previous life as Professor of Computational Mineral Physics in the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Cambridge. Martin, thank you very much for joining us. We'll get on to how you use ISIS in a moment. But first of all, generally, how do scientists get access to ISIS? How do they apply?
So every half year, you will write a little proposal. Then it gets assessed by a panel of your peers, so standard peer review. That happens every half year. And then if you're successful, you get scheduled.
So is there a sort of quota that we must do this much materials, this much biology, this much basic physics, or is it just that the strongest applications win out?
It's always that the strongest win out. But this is the type of science where people will come along and do shortish experiments, 2, 3, 4 days, and there are enough instruments and enough running time that actually you get the mixture more or less quite naturally, I think.
As Martin Bull was saying, there's a sort of village of different instruments around it, which means you can do lots of different experiments at the same time.
Yeah, and they're all different types of experiments. Some of them are to look at specifically at structure. Some of them are to look at the way atoms move around, and some of them are a mixture.
So what is it that you currently use ISIS for in your present position at QMUL?
Well, our big interest is in how the properties of materials are determined by the two aspects that Martin talked about, where the atoms are and how they move around. And we do different sorts of experiments on that. Some of the experiments we do are focused mostly on the structure, in which case you fire the neutrons in and you measure where they come off, and you then fit a very simple model of the structure. Sometimes you actually do what is called spectroscopy, where the neutrons come in and they bounce off with a change in energy. And that change in energy is telling you about the energy of the vibrations inside the material. The other type of experiment, which we've done really quite a lot of lately, is where you attempt to get a series of snapshots of where the atoms are at any point in time. And there you pick up both where they are on average, but actually how they fluctuate as well, how the atoms are bouncing around. And you see both in the same picture. And one of the things that we're trying to then do is build atomic models that are then consistent with the data. And that tells us a lot about the way that the atoms are moving around and how particularly the structure departs from its sort of average structure. And that very often tells you something about the way the material behaves.
So the answers that we're looking for are to do with the structure and also the dynamics
of it.
That's
right, yeah.
How do we then use those answers to actually tell us something meaningful about the physics of it, or at a macro scale, as it were?
Well, in the end, macroscopic properties of materials are determined exactly by what goes on at an atomic scale. So if you look at something like, the range of examples, memory devices, where you clearly have a macroscopic magnetism, but that is due entirely to what the atoms are doing. Batteries are another example that we've been working with a group in chemistry here. Batteries consist of an electrolyte material, and then things move through them, and you have the end electrodes. And where the atoms are going in all that process, again, is something to do with something that neutrons will tell us about, and where the atoms are going will determine what the battery properties are.
So you're able to look at combinations of materials as well as trying to probe, let's say, one homogeneous material to understand how that works. In a battery, for example, obviously you've got more than one material. Can you look at the interfaces, look at the interactions?
Yeah, of course, this is where you start to get into a more challenging regime, because most experiments, when they were originally devised as an instrument, say, would have been thinking about a homogeneous sample, but actually increasingly a lot of the challenges are to do with interfaces.
What sorts of things can ISIS show you that you wouldn't be able to get from, let's say, an electron microscope? We know that electron microscopes can tell you where the atoms are. So what is it that ISIS gives you that's extra to that?
Okay, so you take something like beams of electrons, or you take something like beams of X-rays, and then you take something like beams of neutrons. They're all looking at something that is fundamentally different in the material. The neutron itself is scattering off of the atomic nucleus, whereas X-rays and electrons are interacting with the electrons. So you're picking up a rather different picture. Some materials look invisible, to X-rays and look invisible to electrons, some atoms. So hydrogen, for example, is very difficult to see with X-rays. Actually, it really is very visible with neutrons. And so you're getting a different view of the different atoms.
So it gives you sort of complementary science to the other science that we're doing. Yeah. And what sorts of materials have you actually been looking at? You mentioned to me in a previous conversation about some very odd materials with properties that we just don't expect.
Yeah, usually most materials, when you heat them up, will expand. But there are a whole class of materials that we're beginning to uncover that do exactly the opposite. They shrink when you heat them up. You know, it's kind of completely the opposite to the way you'd expect things to be. That we also think the same materials do something equally odd, which is that when you squash them, they get softer. Most materials, when you squash them, you kind of imagine compacting them, it gets harder and harder, but there are some materials that appear to get softer when you squash them. We think they're actually the same material. We did an experiment very recently, only a matter of a few weeks ago, to observe this directly, and we the material actually is a zinc cyanide. We were able at ISIS to put it into a high-pressure device, and that was fantastic because the neutrons are able to see the sample and not see very much of the pressure device. They're able to pass through all the stuff that makes the high pressure. You get the signal out, and we spent 4 days, 24 hours a day, constantly changing the temperature and the pressure until we got out a picture that showed just how this was behaving, and particularly we're interested in how this was affected by temperature, this effect.
And how do we think it's working?
Well, it's not really a complicated picture, but it's a rather visual picture. If you think of three atoms in a straight line, so A, B, and C, and then the one in the middle might usually be an oxygen, something like that. If it rattles up and down at right angles to this line of atoms, and if that bond of that middle one with the other two atoms is stiff, that one going up and down will want the other bonds to stay at a fixed length. And by moving up and down, it pulls the others in. And that's kind of the way it works. It's a very visual picture, though.
So it actually sort of pulls them in as if they're on springs, as it were.
It's like they were rods. It's like the bonds are very stiff rods, but the one in the middle is able to flex up and down.
So we're able to probe some very unusual properties. Yeah. Thank you very much, Martin. Now, that is Professor Martin Dove from Queen Mary University of London.
Martin will be with us for the rest of the show, so if you have any questions for him or for us, then get in touch. Tweet at Naked Scientists, comment at facebook.com/thenakedscientists, or email chris@thenakedscientists.com.